Decking show number, oh god, I forgot what number it is, 237 for Thursday, September the whatever the hell, 22nd, and I don't know, what's the year? Pardon me, do you have the year?
2019.
So this is Pure Decking number 237. I'm Morps. This is the show about things that interest me, like drinking heavily, internet security, and trying to stay the hell away from the SJWs. My God, are they annoying.
That attracted to green armpit hair?
Not particularly, no. Usually it's a sign of a bacterial infection. As always, we have Mr. Madman. Madman, I'm drinking dragon's milk. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking Maker's on the rocks.
Nice. Very nice. Also with us, BSV. BSV, what are you drinking?
I'm my standard Angry Richard. I'm a creature of habit.
Well, you know, good to know that some things never change.
Variety pack is out again.
No, the variety pack's always out.
Yeah, but they changed what's in it. They recently changed it to the fall selection.
I like my crisp apple.
We also have Big Brother. Big, what are you drinking?
Hot loaded jizz shot right down the back of my throat.
And we are how many minutes in before shift?
You may want to wash that down with something else there, Big.
I have nothing alcoholic, so I'm drinking tea.
Ah. And Static, what are we drinking?
I have nothing at the moment but pills, so I need to fix that shortly.
Are they the little yellow pills with the happy faces on them?
They're staring back at me.
Don't die, Static. Don't die.
They're going to eat me.
Don't take whatever the last pill was ever again.
But it feels so good.
Or take more of them.
I don't know if it's telling you your medicine's going to eat you. Take less of them. There's side effects the doctor didn't warn you about. And as your friend, I want you to know they're exceptionally entertaining and probably bad for you.
As somebody who's wanting to start a YouTube channel, set up a camera, then eat the rest of the pills before they eat you.
Okay.
Told you I was hardcore.
We're not medical professionals. Never take our advice. I just threw a disclaimer in there. Now I don't think we can be sued.
Considering for all we know, all the pills in front of them are Flintstones chewables. I mean...
I don't know. If you said take all the pills in front of me, I've got muscle relaxers, narcotics, and Flintstone chewables. Yes, yes. They're
sounds
in the
like
list.
A party at Madman's house.
Hey, oh, he grabbed the pharmaceutical grab bag. Sounds like the only one he missed out of the standard pack was the Viagra.
No one needs a 4-hour erection without a girlfriend.
I have a wife.
There you go.
So you also have a heart condition. 45 minutes to an hour and a half. 4-hour erections for you would be bad.
Now to be fair, it corrects a blood flow issue. That could be very helpful with a heart condition.
It's actually originally designed for that, but they found an interesting side effect.
The side effect is more marketable. Oh, shit. All right, so anybody else notice North Korea fucked up their DNS?
Oh, that was amazing. Did you actually get to access any of those websites?
No, they were all down every time I tried, but I saw some of the mirrors people were putting up on GitHub.
I did. Okay, so I was actually able to access one of these websites. It had language options, English and Espanol. What the fuck?
Well, they wanted to make sure that their propaganda could be read in all of the relevant countries.
Did they not have a... set in for Cree?
Oh, that was default.
For their own language?
Yeah, that was just default. You could change the option after, though.
So, the article I have is from the mirror.co.uk. All 28 websites on North Korea's version of the internet, that line alone, all 28 websites on North Korea's version of the internet.
What, you want to have more than just 28?
I think you need at least 30 for it to become an internet and not just a really big network.
It's probably all hosted on the same computer.
You're probably right about that, truth be told. All 28 websites on North Korea's version of the internet were open to outsiders, causing a surge of demand that flooded the state systems. When a list of North Korea's available websites was posted on Reddit, the surge of visitors to the reclusive state's online offerings overloaded the servers. North Korea runs a completely locked down version of the internet that consists of only 28 websites that the population is allowed to view. The tightly controlled content is yet another way for Kim Jong-un's government to govern the flow of information inside its borders. However, a technical slip-up allowed a GitHub user to work their way into the country's computer network and view the websites from the outside. As the GitHub user puts it, one of North Korea's top-level name servers was accidentally configured to allow global DNS transfers. This allowed anyone who performs a zone transfer request to the country's ns2.kptc.kp name server to get a copy of the nation's top-level DNS data. So, for anybody who doesn't know what a zone transfer is, that's where you pretend, well, not even pretend, you set up another DNS server and you tell the first DNS server, I'd like a copy of your zone. Everything you're managing, and well, you can have multiple zones on a DNS server, but usually they're only set up with one. So it's you say you want a copy of the zone, and either you're caching or you're going to mirror, or it's not an uncommon, or it didn't used to be an uncommon thing, except you had a lot of people who mixed their public and private on the same DNS servers, and they would just set the DNS server up, okay, if it's up from the public interface, answer on the public addresses, if it's private, answer with the private. So you could do a zone transfer and get all the private addresses from the public side. So apparently somebody in Korea, or Best Korea, I believe is the joke, screwed up their DNS and let anybody zone transfer. Pretty soon, links to all the websites were posted on Reddit, where thousands of visitors took to the opportunity to see what the websites look like from Pyongyang. I think there are more websites on the internet in GTA 5 than in North Korea, one commenter pointed out. Correct, actually. North Korean website has 28 websites. GTA 5 has 83. Virtual World has more websites than... That is hilarious. I think it's safe to say that San Andreas is more technologically advanced than North Korea, said another. Well, yeah. While a number of North Korea's websites are unavailable to access, clues to their content can be derived from their addresses. Cooks.org.kp is a website devoted to recipes, where KCNA.kp is a news agency. Reddit's surge of traffic isn't the first time Korea's internet has been knocked out. In 2014, the country suffered a distributed dial-in service attack that was believed to have originated from the U.S. And I love all the stock art in these in this article. Because, somebody mentioned Grand Theft Auto 5, so there's the big old Grand Theft Auto logo. Somebody else meant, they've got all these pictures from North Korea. My favorite is the North Korean girls working a computer that's not on.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, so some of the mirrors on those websites were hilarious. The propaganda was out there, too, talking about how the U.S. was still burning and all this other stuff. It's just like, I kind of wonder if they hire, fiction writers or take plots from movies and just tell the North Koreans that's actually happening.
It's just their dear leaders. I would have said.
Yeah, it's personal MySpace.
Yeah. Pretty much.
So, they grabbed a copy of 2014 and plays it as a news broadcast.
Well, now, here's the question, though. In all seriousness, I'm kind of laughing at the whole 28 websites thing. How many people in North Korea actually have computers at all?
I doubt there's that many computers.
I mean, I think, don't they have problems getting basic power to most of their people?
They have the problem getting basic food to most of their people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mostly the high-level officials that have computers, from what I understand. I mean, they've got their own Linux distro, which is weird. It's still weird to me.
I always thought that was a joke, truth be told. I thought somebody made that for them.
I could hope. I don't know if you were around.
I kind of think what's going on is, like, there's, like, one guy in the North Korean government who's an IT nerd. And so, like, he wanted to make a Linux distro, so he made the official, you know, Pyongyang North Korea Red Star Linux. Now he wanted to make sure they had an internet, so he set up the North Korea internet. And, you know, he's just making all this stuff about Kim Jong-un because, you know, he doesn't want to get shot. But I kind of imagine it's like a small group of people in North Korea who actually want to play with computers. So they're setting all this shit up. And, like, because most, I would imagine most people in North Korea don't care. If it's 28 websites, you're not going to bother with an internet connection. You'll have read it all in an afternoon. I don't know. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're pretty much right.
Yeah.
So according to MakeUseOf, as of January last year, North Korea, the entire country, only had 1,024 IP addresses in use.
Well, for a country, that's a bit light. Hell, for a university, that's light. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in comparison, South Korea had 112 million in use at the same time frame.
But yeah, but half of those are World of Warcraft farming bots, so...
True.
I was going to say they're all playing StarCraft.
That's the other half.
So... But, yeah, I almost wonder if it's a giant-ass troll. If it's like, no, most North Koreans don't fuck on the internet. They don't have computers. And the ones that know what's up are using some kind of a tunnel to get out. We know this stuff's bullshit. We put it out there to screw with you people. And hell, if I was running an IT in North Korea, I would do that shit. It's like, what? Everybody already thinks we're crazy. Let's just have fun with them. Let's accidentally leak the DNS and, you know, have some idiot go post it on Reddit and... you know, let them see this bullshit. No?
Well, I don't know if you're too far from the truth. Have you seen their television? I don't know if you were around a few years ago. RU, I believe, found a stream for North Korean television. After it got done with their Korea's Got Talent, which is creepy as fuck, there was this weird news documentary that was on talking about how poor America was and, like,
oh,
we're drinking snow, amazing. Like, melted snow.
That's
amazing.
That's our coffee, big. Oh, that's our coffee. Oh.
I loved that documentary. I wish I could find that again. That was fantastic. Although, what I always enjoyed about North Korean news was that announcer who's just like I don't know what she's taking, but it's got to be something great because she's bouncing off the wall, screaming her head off about stuff.
She's like, taking the drug. They have my family at gunpoint. Oh, God, no.
It's like, if we could get her email address, could you think we could get her to record some bumpers for the stations? That would be amazing. Like in a North Korean accent?
And then we find out later that they killed her.
Damn it! Somebody send Kim Jong-un a letter. We're sorry, we just thought it'd be funny. Leave the poor woman alone. Anyways. Yeah. I don't know. So, Big, you got to see some of the websites, actually, because every time I tried, they were down, but I was kind of busy at work this week, too, so I didn't get to dig on them too much.
I only got to load one, and it was the one that interested me the most, friend.kp. I thought maybe it was some kind of, like, Facebook or MySpace for Korea, and that interested me, but I don't know what the content was, because obviously it was in Korean. There were language options, English and Spanish. I couldn't get either one of them to work. Yeah, it was just weird. I feel like they stole it from someplace and just put their own shit on there and accidentally left the options for language there.
Probably did. Although, the real question is, when you make an account, is Kim Jong-un your friend? Is he the North Korean version of Tom?
No. You're not important enough to be Kim Jong-un's friend. He has his undersecretary as your friend, maybe. And then, if you suck enough of his cock... You become an acquaintance of Kim Jong-un. Lower the dear leader to our level.
I would set up an account on North Korea's Facebook just so you could PM, you know, North Korean leaders. I would do that. Nobody else? Nobody else would have fun with that?
I think, like, legit.
Here's pictures of my cat. I mean, you know.
I really don't know exactly how crazy he is, though. Since I remember them saying something about finding a cave with unicorn remains.
Unicorn remains.
It.
I mean, they did land
personally,
on the sun.
Personally, that country is messed up, and I'm not surprised they have that few pages. Or websites.
I'd love to get some of their propaganda and Photoshop it for them, and then send it back so they could put it in their news agencies. Like, here's some free artwork from the internet. It's like, you say you've landed on the sun, here, let's Photoshop this for you. You know, we'll come up with some, like, weird-looking spacesuits and put Kim Jong-un in one of them, like, standing on the sun waving. I'd do that shit. That'd be fun. You know, the fact that I live on the other side of the planet and, you know, in America, so I'm not terribly worried about them retaliating for internet trolling.
They're going to throw rocks at us, man, and then scream that we should give them food.
We'll have to get Madman an account just so he can send Kim Jong-un pictures for Harlequin babies.
Mops, you say that now. Next week, you're going to have North Korean showing up on your doorstep.
No, what I would do is just send their entire country pictures of what I'm eating.
Oh, that's fucking mean.
That's like, no, this isn't my meal for the day. This is dinner. I had two others just like it.
Madman, why do you have in what I'm eating a Harlequin baby?
Because North Korea needs to not only envy my gluttony, but fear all Americans. Not only can we afford to eat as much as we want, we can also eat demon babies. And regularly do.
All right, so let's move on to the next one. This is getting silly. First thing I have in regular news, The Hill has an interesting article. So most of this week there were rumors circulating around Reddit that somebody had figured out who Clinton's email administrator was, and that he had been asking for help on deleting shit on, like, the sysadmin subreddit. Which, to be fair, if you're in IT and you don't know how to do something, you go on the forums and look. So, I mean, it's kind of funny. So, this article from The Hill, Oversight has ordered Reddit to preserve deleted posts in Clinton investigation. If they're already deleted, they may be too late. Excuse me.
That man has been hunted down and shot already. He's one of the six mysterious deaths in her advisors. This post will do no good.
The House Oversight Committee has ordered Reddit to preserve deleted posts believed to be written by an IT technician the committee suspects may have deleted Hillary Clinton's emails that were under subpoena. Chairman Jason Chaffetz, Republican of Utah, confirmed that the committee has issued a preservation order and that Reddit is cooperating. The order has the weight of law. You can't destroy things and hope things magically get erased, he told The Hill Wednesday. I can destroy things, and I can hope all I want. That just doesn't make it true, buddy. I'm sorry, I just thought that his sentence there was a bit nonsensical. At issue is whether an employee of the Denver, Colorado-based tech firm that managed Clinton's server sought advice on how to digitally alter the address lines of emails thought to be from the former Secretary of State the day after the State Department had agreed to provide certain Clinton emails to the Benghazi committee. The allegations fit the pattern of what you think was happening, Chaffetz said. The committee is looking into claims of some Reddit users who say they have uncovered a 2-year-old post from an account believed to belong to Paul Combetta, an engineer with the firm Plate River Networks. The message has been deleted, but can be read in archives of pages saved by other users. The evidence linking the Reddit account behind the post to Combetta is circumstantial, but Reddit users insist it is compelling, and the committee members appear to agree. Congress is trolling Reddit posts for evidence at this point.
Everything else suddenly magically disappears.
That's archive.org. Thanks. I'm very confident that the amount of circumstantial evidence certainly points in one direction. Representative Mark Meadows, Republican from North Carolina, chairman of the panel's Government Operations Subcommittee, told The Hill, "We are just trying to make doubly sure that we can authenticate that in a real way, because if not, it'll be challenged on a number of fronts. We have to verify the authenticity, but we are pursuing it with vigor," Chaffetz said. "On the surface, it may be accurate, but we've got to make sure the Reddit posts are preserved and that we have to dive deeper into the authenticity. It is unclear what exactly the committee will be able to learn from the information Reddit preserves. According to the company's public policy for handling official requests, it maintains basic subscriber information like IP logs, which identify the computer used to access a site, but it's 2 years old. Most sites, you're lucky if they keep a year. Hell, most things, you're lucky for something like Reddit, you'd probably be lucky if they keep a month, as busy as they are. According to the policy, Reddit can maintain deleted records like a user's account for 90 days if it receives an official preservation order. Otherwise, the information will be subject to Reddit's normal retention and deletion schedules. The Hill reached out to Reddit for comment, but did not receive a response, blah, 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 blah. So, basically, the Oversight Committee is telling Reddit you have to preserve these posts because they might be related to Hillary Clinton. They might be reaching, but I think it's funny because people were losing their mind over this last week. And anybody who works in IT knows that going on forums and saying, hey, I've been tasked with something, what's the best way to go about this, is not a weird thing.
Yeah, it's pretty normal.
So, but I don't know.
Have you read some of the comments from them? From the supposed guy.
He was asking about changing address lines. What's the best tool for deleting hard drives? None of it seemed all that out of whack, really. I mean, sure, he's deleting shit, but I think people do that all the time. I just sent a whole box of old NAS hard drives off to get hydraulically punched. So, I mean, you know.
Morps in the next email debacle.
You know, it's funny. One of the guys I work with sent me the DICE job posting for Hillary Clinton's security advisor. I said, if I just walk in, point to Hillary Clinton, say there's your security leak problem, and walk out, would I get paid?
So. You'd have to write up a white paper on it first.
Okay, I can read. That's not hard. Well, be easier than what I've been doing. Anyways, yeah. Next story. Anybody else on Clinton's email?
No. It's kind of been done. She should be arrested. That's it.
You're assuming she lives that long.
I don't think anyone's going to bump her off.
I'm not talking about the pneumonia. So, anyways, next article is from TechDirt. Nashville council member admits AT&T and Comcast wrote the anti-Google fiber bill that she submitted. So TechDirt has been talking about how the next great battlefield of broadband is utility pole attachment reform. In many cities, the incumbent broadband provider owns the utility poles, giving them a perfect opportunity to hinder competitors. In other cities, the local utility or the city itself owns the poles, but incumbent ISPs have lobbied for laws making it more difficult for competitors to access them quickly and inexpensively. Google Fiber has been pushing one-touch make-ready rules in several cities, aimed at streamlining this bureaucracy by letting a licensed third-party installer move any ISP's gear, often a matter of inches. Well, There's always the thing when you start talking about fucking with another company's property, that if you mess it up, licensed or not, I realize the licensing is the whole point of not messing it up. Once you start moving another company's gear, the liabilities, oh my God. Not to mention the fact that any time there's a connection issue, the company won't actually help their customers. They'll just say, well, the technicians are out there fucking with the poles, so we don't know what they're doing, and that'll be the end of it. So, on one hand, I understand why they want to do it. It makes perfect sense that, especially on something like utility pole, just they're talking about moving a wire out of the way most of the time. But I can see so many ways for this to go wrong.
With Google entering into the system, If they're saying, oh, it's the tech's fault and you still have crappy service, you know what the next tech you're going to call is?
Google.
Not going to be Comcast. It's going to be Google. It's only going to help the situation.
That, and also if they can't move the wire, as long as everything's approved and that, it's fine. But if the competitors just put the wires in a way that leaves no room, it...
Yeah, no, I mean, if you're trying to get multiple lines out there, I understand. It's just one of those things where it's like, it makes perfect sense until you think of all the ways this can go wrong and all the ways people are going to weasel out. But Madman's got a very compelling point that if there's multiple ISPs in the area, hence the whole reason you have this going on, you've actually got options as opposed to being stuck with whatever your service is. So back to the article here. This week, Nashville City Council is planning the final in a series of votes to approve Google Fiber's one-touch make-ready rules. But AT&T has always already promised to sue the city if Nashville passes the ordinance. Meanwhile, AT&T and Comcast have taken another route to try to delay Google Fiber. They've urged a Nashville City Council member to propose an alternative city resolution that would supplant Google's Fiber plan with a plan that doesn't appear to actually do anything outside of stalling the Google Fiber proposal. Under this alternative right touch proposal, pole attachment would only see modest changes, leading Nashville City Councilman Jeremy Elrod to derive the move as little more than a last gasp effort by AT&T and Comcast to protect their duopoly fiefdom. Google Fiber Service and other competitors will be forced to roll out their service at a trickle. Under the one touch ordinance, it will be like opening the floodgates, Elrod said in an emailed statement. This resolution coming at a last minute should to be considered at the same night as a third reading of the one-touch bill just shows that it's the last gasp of Comcast and AT&T desperately trying to hold on to their top place on the utility pole. These two companies should not be the gatekeepers that get to decide when and where their customers get access to a competitor, but a memorandum of understanding like this one enshrines that they will stay that way. Comcast and AT&T would win, and the competition and consumers would lose. AT&T and Comcast's compelling resolution, or competing resolution, was proposed by Nashville council member Sherry Weiner. W-E-I-N-E-R. Sherry Weiner. Or it's probably Weiner. W-E-I-N-E-R.
Now, who's she sharing the Weiner with? That's a porn name if I ever heard it.
Who amusedly admitted to Ars Technica that the incumbent ISPs wrote the proposal. And while she intended to edit some of it herself, it just didn't happen. I told them that I would file a resolution if they had something that made sense and wasn't as drastic as a one-touch make-ready. Weiner told Ars in an email today. When we asked her what role AT&T Comcast played in drafting the resolution, Weiner said that she is insisting on some changes to the resolution, but the proposal, full text, was submitted without those changes. When asked why she didn't put her suggestion changes in the version of the resolution published on the council website, Weiner said, I had them, AT&T and Comcast, submit it for me as I was out of town all last week on business.
Hold she up. Literally... She didn't have access to the internet? Anywhere in the United States?
She just let them write a proposal and submit it under her name.
She was probably in an area that AT&T owns, but they're not rolling out lines to.
This is called regulatory capture, gentlemen, and it's why there shouldn't be very many regulations. Here's only two you need. Keep your word, don't shoot people.
I have the follow-up story from the Tennessean here, the Tennessean is interesting. They had somebody try to forcefully sign me up to receive a newspaper. When I told them no, they said, okay, I'll put you down for the Sunday paper. I said no. AT&T on Thursday sued Metro Government over the new One Touch Make Ready ordinance aimed at helping Google Fiber expand its gigabit internet to Nashville, setting the stage for the next battlefront in the city's fight over broadband. The widely expected lawsuit filed in federal court comes just one day after Mayor Megan Barry signed into law the much-debated change to the city's policy over utility poles after Metro County had voted to approve the measure on Tuesday. So, for those of you who aren't reading between the lines, Nashville passed the one-touch make-ready rule that Google wanted, and now AT&T has filed a lawsuit. In the company's complaint, AT&T argues that under federal law, the Federal Communications Commission, not local municipalities like Metro, have jurisdiction to regulate privately owned utility poles. Really? I didn't think the FCC had local poles. I thought that was owned by anything not explicitly spelled out in the Constitution left to the many states. Isn't that how that reads? Anyways, in Nashville, 80% of the city's utility poles are owned by the Nashville Electric Service, with AT&T owning the remaining 20%. AT&T is seeking a declaratory and permanent injunction from the U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Tennessee to stop the Metro from enforcing the new law. But that's a key distinction from asking the judge for a preliminary injunction, which would have meant they could have asked the court to intervene and halt the new ordinance immediately. AT&T's case largely mirrors the legal argument that the company's attorneys have made against Louisville, Kentucky, which is in the midst of fighting litigation against AT&T after it passed a similar one-touch make-ready ordinance earlier this year. Jolene Phelps, president of AT&T Tennessee, has made clear a lawsuit against Metro was likely if Nashville passed the ordinance. AT&T remains committed to Nashville, and our more than 2,200 area employees will continue to turn our significant investment in the area into fiber optic based wired and wireless connectivity that Nashville residents and businesses demand, AT&T Tennessee spokesperson Joe Bergen said in a statement. In addition, we have maintained from day one of this discussion, Tennessee municipalities do not have jurisdiction to regulate pole attachments. And while we have worked with the mayor, members of the council, NES, and others towards a better solution for Nashville in light of recent vote, we have no other option but challenge this unlawful ordinance in federal court. And the article goes on. So, yeah, they're literally suing the city of Nashville for letting another company in to try to set up an ISP.
I hope they lose so bad.
But, Mopes, what about their monopoly?
think of the monopoly.
Think of all the money you're taking from them. They won't be able to eat.
Go ahead, Maven.
If they used eminent domain to get that 20% of poles, you just go back like, fine, no problem. The city is now using eminent domain to get them back. We now have 100% of the poles. Or you're like, okay, no problem. You'll have to buy them outright from us. They're now $1 billion a pole. Have fun. Because all those poles, companies didn't pay to put them up. Cities decided they fell under eminent domain to give everyone on a block how much whatever's there, power, cable, whatever the fuck, and just paid whoever owned the land for that pole and said, you have to sell it. This isn't a Nashville has taken AT&T's property unjustly. That property was seized from someone else, or AT&T. They don't have a moral leg to stand on. And as far as legal, Morps is kind of right. Powers not expressly given to the federal government, nor expressly denied to the states, are reserved to the states. And the federal government only has jurisdiction over state-to-state commerce. This is staying within one city in one state. They can't argue interstate commerce.
I think at this point, it's just a delay tactic at this point. They're just trying to make it as expensive as possible, hoping that that people give up before they do.
They're going after a city that can tax them. Nashville can have AT&T fund Nashville fighting AT&T. Look at this new city ordinance we just passed.
AT&T,
all AT&T bills have a 10% tax on them now.
But before you go too nuts with the taxation, AT&T is a major employer in the Nashville area. They're not going to fuck them over too badly, because eventually AT&T will just say hell with it and leave, and then they're out 2,000 some odd jobs. So the city's not going to do that if they can help it. But
and AT&T isn't moving corporate infrastructure over a city ordinance.
God, I hope not. That'd be hilarious.
Going to think the expense in moving.
Yeah, that's true. So, next article is also from Tech Dirt, and is hilarious. Italy is proposing a law to make it illegal to mock people online.
Oh, God.
I'd have to shut down the Italian version of Pure Decking. Oh, wait, we've already done that, since I don't speak Italian.
Spaghetti, motherfucker. I speak Italian.
I can grow a mustache and just do the Peter Griffin thing, saying bippity-boppity, and...
Yeah. I speak most Italian. Arrivederci, buongiorno.
I like crescent rolls. Get it?
Yeah.
Croissant? Yeah, okay.
We got it.
That's French, isn't it?
I don't know. Same shit.
I eat French fries all the time. That counts, right? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Fries, we lost the joke somewhere.
No, if anyone wants hate mail, I didn't earn this one.
Every so often, we see probably well-intentioned but incredibly stupid attempts to fight online harassment and bullying through laws that make saying things that are offensive against the law. In the U.S., such laws, if they actually get passed, are usually thrown out once somebody makes a First Amendment challenge to them. But elsewhere in the world, there's no First Amendment to fall back on. Over in Italy, some officials have proposed what may be one of the dumbest laws in history, written so broadly that it will outlaw a lot more than the kind of cyberbullying it's supposed to combat. Under the proposed law, the site manager of Italian media, including bloggers, newspapers, and social networks, would be obliged to censor mockery based on the personal and social condition of the victim. That is, anything the recipient felt was personally insulting. Anything the recipient felt was personally insulting. Whoever's running the website is supposed to censor.
Monty Python's Flying Circus cannot be aired or streamed in Italy.
The penalty for failing to take action is a fine of 100,000 euros. Truthfulness is not a defense in suits under the law. So it's like, you're objectively ugly. Well, you know, he survived a train wreck. Yes, he's objectively ugly. No, it doesn't matter. That's insulting. Take it down. The standard is a personal insult, not falsehood. Literally, it is.
So if I say you're a fucking thief, you child molesting bastard, and it's a pedophile that steals shit, I still have to remove that post because it is personally insulting.
Yeah, it doesn't matter that it's true. So, but here's the thing. You take this to its logical extreme, you know, especially with some of the SJWs out there. You know, somebody says, you man, or hey man, you know, it's like, oh, you called me a man, you horrible thing. You know, and now you're offended.
I identify as an attack helicopter. Here's my rocket.
I find commas offensive. You must remove all commas from your webpage.
Oh, God. I find the Italian language offensive.
Oh, my God. I hope this happens.
Like a normal American, you Italian bastards. Now remove all of that from your website.
I hope this gets abused so badly they have to fix it and get rid of it.
And so the article goes on making fun of it, saying, mockery on the internet? We're shocked!
Oh, God, where do you think the trolls live? They're not under bridges anymore. They were the first to move onto the internet.
Well, if you think about it, they're mocking them in this article about not mocking them. Oh, shit. Yeah, so if it passes, you just shut the internet down in Italy, basically, because you've just made it impossible, because you do have the rule of the offended with the SJW types who are just like Madman said, they identify as an attack helicopter, and because you don't put the right pronouns on your website under the forum membership options, you've now been fined enough to, you know, 100,000 or 100,000 euros.
Money.
That's I'm turning off the comment section on my website because I can't afford it once.
That's shutting down my website just in case.
Yeah, no shit. That's what it is. It's you shut down the blog because you can't afford that fine once.
God, that's retarded.
Anybody have anything else before we move on to the Firefox update? Because this is kind of cool.
I just sincerely hope this gets abused to fuck. I hope 4chan finds it and just destroys it.
Oh, 4chan will find it in every Italian government website. We'll have complaints filed against it.
We need to figure out how to type in an Italian accent convincingly. And so we can come.
I'm just going to use Google Translate and type as redneck as I fucking can and confuse the shit out of that.
I find your proper use of conjugates offensive.
Offensive, motherfucker.
Oh, I can't think what they would call it on Tumblr. I'm trying to think, what would you call somebody who finds nouns offensive?
A verbalist?
A verbalist. You verbal privilege, motherfucker.
I try to speak only in adjectives.
Yeah, try. You just failed in that sentence.
You said tried very hard or was very good at it.
So Firefox is putting out update 49, and this is cool for Linux users because they've basically ripped the Flash plugin out of Chrome it's the DRM plugin out of Chrome. It's the same module. They've set it up as an add-on to Firefox 49 for Linux. Where to go? Yeah, secure login manager, reader mode improvements. Non-essential Flash content will be blocked, so they're going to block Flash ads. And here it is. Plug-in-free Netflix and Amazon Video on Linux. So Firefox 49 on Linux will support plug-in-free playback of Netflix and Amazon Video. This is done through integration of Google Wildvine CDM for Linux, which is the same thing that Chrome on Linux uses so that Netflix and all that stuff works. So, and actually Adobe has resurrected the Flash plugin on Linux. That's what I was thinking of. So they're going to start updating that again. So short of AAA games, you know, the major browsers on Linux are going to have Netflix and Flash support for at least a little while. Unless you're doing AAA games or have exotic hardware or exotic software requirements, the stuff that only runs on Windows, you can comfortably live full-time on Linux now. So that's cool. You could do it before. It was just more of a pain in the butt to get things like Netflix working. But since Firefox is going to make it work out of the box, that's nice. Anybody else? Anything on that?
I thought Flash was dying. Why are they making Flash work?
It's dying, but it's not. One of the reasons it was dying is because HTML5 came in and things like, you know, what Netflix does with their HTML stuff. But a lot of things were using Flash for banner ads, and Newgrounds is still around, so you do still see Flash used in a lot of websites. So, but
the zombie.
Yeah, it won't die. It's like one of these old standards that just won't go the hell away. But eventually, HTML5 will supplant it, just because it'll get to the point where people aren't installing it anymore. So you have to have enough new machines where nobody's bothered to go out and install it where it hasn't come pre-installed, so that it becomes one of those things where it's like back in the 90s, there was a web browser plugin that I always loved because it made MIDI sound files sound awesome, called Beatnik. Because remember, people used to put MIDI files as background music on web pages? Well,
oh,
Beatnik,
man, those were the day.
Beatnik was basically a sound font player for MIDI files. And it came with a nice sound font installed, so your MIDI files sounded awesome through it compared to how they sounded just, you know, on the regular old mapper. And it never took off because, well, you had to install shit, right? So it's the same reason you saw a lot of the, back in the day, you had like the VRML, and you had a lot of web browser plugins that did some pretty neat stuff, actually. But you couldn't get... You just couldn't get people to install the shit because it's like, what? I've got to install something? You know, and, you know, especially after, like, RealPlayer blew up and people realized everything was spying on them. So, you know, Flash, everybody installed it for YouTube, really. And you've got to get to where it's not coming on things anymore, to where you get back to that whole people don't want to install shit. And Of course, now it's really easy to install add-ons and stuff, too. I don't know if you've seen people's Chrome browsers lately. Holy crap. It's like the old Internet Explorer with all the damn toolbar plugins and add-ons down the side. It's like, what the hell? The guy at work, and I mean, he literally had half his screen taken up with all this add-on toolbar shit. It's like, what the hell is that? It's like, wait, that's Chrome. What are you doing? You go look, and it's all these Chrome store add-ons. So, but shit's too easy to install. So it's either too easy to install, or they, you know, people won't do it because they have to install something. I don't know where I'm going with this. Big, say something. Just get me out of here so we can move on to the next article.
My piss bottle's full. I'm going to empty it soon.
Okay, good for you. Next article is from theregister.co.uk. Homeless Yorkshire man must tell police in advance if he wants to have a flirty text chat. This is nuts.
Mm?
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is crazy. A homeless IT consultant will learn today whether his challenge to a draconian order, which forces him to tell police in advance if he is going to have sex, will succeed.
What?
I remember reading about this.
No, hold up. I would be bragging. I'd just walk through the police station, shake hands with everyone. It's like, I'm about to get laid. It's going to happen around 8 o'clock tonight.
Y'all want to come watch?
I'm christening the park. We're going to fuck on the slide, the swing, the merry-go-round. It's going to be a merry round.
John O'Neill, 45, must tell cops 24 hours in advance if he even only plans on kissing or engaging in sexually explicit conversation. He has never been convicted of any criminal offense. North Yorkshire Police is opposing O'Neill's application for the interim sex risk order to be scrapped, which is being heard today at York, Massachusetts Court, and is asking for it to be made permanent if his challenge fails. O'Neill is banned from using the internet via any device which police cannot later check. He must also reveal the PIN number for his phone to police so they can go through it at will. The terms of the sexual risk order mean he must physically hand over for inspection any electronic device he uses, sometimes every other day. He is banned from using or owning forensics wiping software.
He has never been convicted of a crime. Has he been accused by, like, thousands of people?
He's been accused by one. He was cleared of a rape following a retrial in which he said the verdict was unanimous last November. So he had a trial for rape, was convicted, had a retrial, they cleared him. They said, oh, we fucked up the first time. North Yorkshire Police convinced Judge Simon Bourne Arton, QC, to impose a SRO after he described O'Neill as a dangerous individual following his acquittal, according to The Telegraph. My chief objection is that the police are simply ignoring the verdict and treating me in every practical sense as though I was found guilty, O'Neill told the newspaper. The sweeping obligations, which are entirely unlawful, make life, especially work, utterly impossible. The injustice of being punished and stigmatized for a crime that never took place cannot be put into words. So he was put on trial, acquitted, admittedly after a retrial, so they put this sexual risk order on him where basically the police follow him around, he has to report to him all the time, and they monitor everything he does. The restrictions on his phone and internet usage have left O'Neill unable to work or claim benefits, he argues, claiming that he was advised to declare himself unavailable for work because the SRO forces him to physically hand over any communication devices he uses. He's an IT consultant. He has to hand any computer he touches, the police have to inspect.
So if he works for a bank, every computer in that bank that he works on,
he has to let the police look through, yeah. Which would make it impossible for any IT consultant to get a job in that scenario. That's absolutely true. This, reported the BBC, prevents him from applying for any jobs involving an office computer or telephone. A local paper, The News and Star, reported that O'Neill, a former English literature mature student and a father of two, has a interest in sadomasochistic sex. This was brought up at his November retrial, including a witness statement by a doctor with whom O'Neill has discussed his fantasies. Okay.
If the chick's into it, you're not doing anything wrong.
Right. He claims, this is where it gets weird, he claims the doctor misunderstood what he was saying, and it appears she contacted the police to inform them of a confession. So he was talking to a therapist, I assume, it just says doctor, about, you know, urges and fantasies, and so the doctor called the cops on him. O'Neill, who arrived at court this morning unshaven and wearing jeans with an open-necked shirt, is representing himself because, as he reportedly told journalists present, losing his entitlement to benefits also deprived him of legal aid. A Department for Work and Pension spokesperson denied to the BBC that this was the case. According to Gov.UK, his case does qualify for legal aid, but whether or not he fulfills the financial hardship criterion is unknown. So, sexual risk orders are civil orders which became available to police and the National Crime Agency in early 2015. Police employees can apply to a magistrate to impose the order. The law allows police to apply for the punishment to be imposed in cases where the defendant is found not guilty. Merely being in a case where the court deals with you as a defendant is enough. It's automatic. Minimum duration is 2 years, and it can be renewed indefinitely. Guidance issued to the police by the Home Office of How to Impose an SRO states that the defendant should have committed an act of sexual nature, and it goes on to say the term intentionally covers a broad range of behavior. Such behavior may, in other circumstances and contexts, have innocent intentions. It also states it is not necessary for the defendant to have a prior conviction for a sexual offense in order to apply for an SRO before explaining what should and should not be imposed by an SRO. An order, whether full or interim, can only contain restrictions on the behavior of the defendant, i.e., it cannot require them to do something. It cannot require them to comply with conditions requiring positive action. Neither the courts nor the police will at any stage during the application process for the order, or as part of any order granted, be able to require the defendant to take any part in any assessment or receive any support or counseling. Such actions would be purely voluntary basis. It appears the insane requirements on O'Neill to report sexual activity in advance and to hand over phones, etc., to police on demand do not comply in any way with this section of the guidance. An ongoing problem with the Home Office guidance being issued in place of proper laws is that by its very nature, police employees can freely ignore and even contradict a guidance document without any comebacks or penalties for doing so. So the Home Office says this is how you should use the law, but there's no actual enforcement behind that, and so police can do crazy things here.
There shouldn't be a law that says you're guilty even after you're proven innocent.
That's why what? I thought this was crazy.
I'd fucking move.
Out of the country? You know how hard that is?
Yeah.
This is a country-wide law. It's not like Yorkshire passed it. It's Great Britain.
Yeah, good point.
They are literally hounding this guy after he was found innocent. Now, whether he's innocent or guilty, I don't know. I have no idea, right? And, you know, the fact that he says he was told he doesn't get legal aid, and then they're saying, oh, no, he does. I mean, sure sounds like the guy's getting railroaded.
Well, they said he could qualify for legal aid if he meets the financial hardship.
And if he can't work as an IT consultant because he can't touch an electronic device, hell, he couldn't even work as a cash register.
Yeah, I mean, they have literally made the guy unemployable despite the fact that he was found innocent.
No, unemployable as an IT consultant. He can be a bricklayer.
Go dig a ditch, yeah.
He can go dig a ditch. He can turn tricks if prostitution is legal.
Wait, wait.
That's the problem he's having. They can make an argument, you can't do the job that you've trained for, you can be trained for another job.
I know a job he can work for, he can be IT for the police.
Oh yeah, then the police already are going to be accessing those. You've solved the problem, BSV.
Get there it is.
Whoever came up with that law needs to be drug out in the street, doused with gasoline, and set on fire. They've just shit on English common law. A system of law so great that it was at one point used in 75% of countries on the planet and is still used in a majority of them today because it made perfect sense. and they shat on it.
Yeah, I thought that was a bit nuts.
Oh, so. God, and SJW wrote that. That was written by a stupid woman.
Well, sir, in all seriousness, I mean, you look at what an SRO is, where basically the police think somebody might be a danger so they can start enforcing all this stuff. It had to be written by somebody who was thinking pre-crime. They're thinking, we're going to stop sexual assaults before they happen. The problem is, when you do that, you are technically punishing somebody who's innocent. Sure, you might have prevented a crime, but you don't know that. If somebody hasn't done anything, and you're punishing them...
You're punishing innocent people, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's an inescapable logical problem. I mean, I don't care how despicable the guy is. I don't care what he's into. The fact that he may have hurt somebody notwithstanding, you can stop an in-progress crime. But just saying, nope, we know you're going to commit a crime...
That's the horrible thing. No one knows that anyone's going to commit a crime. God, I've got to Google his name. There is a neuroscientist who actually found a neurological link. Like, serial killers have a certain brain pattern. We still can't use that to lock up people preemptively, because the scientist that discovered it, who has not killed anyone, who has not committed any crimes, has the same brain pattern. Like MRI scans and shit. It's amazing. So pre-crime doesn't work, because as far as we know and can show, free will still exists.
Well, Madman, I can prove all the people convicted of crime... Oh, wait, no, I can't prove if they were all human. I remember a monkey being convicted for being a spy back in the day. Dang it!
Sorry, well, I can conclusively say every criminal was innocent at one point, so innocent people are dangerous.
What do you think, Big?
It... Wow.
Hurts, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. It feels like some... entitled SJW wrote it. I don't know.
This guy has a perfect excuse to go punish her or something. I mean...
And England is considered a first world country.
Dedek, you got any opinion before we move on?
It sucks, but I go back to the original comment that Big made. Move.
Yeah. I think you could actually seek asylum in the United States for persecution.
Yeah. I think at that point you're right.
I think he has an asylum claim, and he already speaks the language. He has a skill set that's in demand.
Of anybody that actually could really have a claim for asylum, yeah, he does.
Yeah. All right, let's... next article here is from the Huffington Post. A new survey has found that 77% of ad blocking users feel some guilt about blocking ads. Bullshit. This goes against common stereotypes that ad blocking users don't care about digital content publishers losing revenue, and suggests that if publishers took steps to make their ads less intrusive and less annoying, more users might be tolerant of their advertising. You know, it's not even the annoying ads. It's all the fucking malware. That and pop-ups. Gladly.
Wouldn't pop-ups be the annoying ad morphs?
That's the joke. That was the joke, Batman.
Okay.
You know, it's like saying two things you hate in life: people who have an unfounded intolerance of people from other cultures, and the Dutch. So, anyways, gladly, an ad tech startup surveyed 243 random users of the ad blocking program GoodBlock. Their report was primarily focused on users' whitelisting behavior, their feelings and reactions toward the publishers who utilized anti-ad blocking tactics, and their thoughts on online advertising in general. The most surprising finding was that 77% of adblock users felt some level of guilt about blocking ads on content they view online. 52% of those surveys said they dislike online ads, but understood that publishers rely on ad revenue to make money and create content. This indicates that many adblocking users fully understand the consequences of utilizing these programs and are understandably torn about doing so. At the time when the use of ad-blocking programs is becoming increasingly prevalent, this provides a glimmer of hope for both seasoned digital content publishers and those looking to start a blog. Most ad-blocking users allow ads to show on some websites. The Gladly report also found that 77% of those surveyed have selectively whitelisted at least one website, while 40% have whitelisted at least five. This shows that ad-blocking users are willing to support websites they enjoy and that they feel provides an acceptable user experience. However, many ad-blocking users indicated that they find it frustrating when a website forces them to disable their ad blocker in order to access content. 30% of those surveyed said they are less likely to use such a site, such as Forbes, that forces whitelisting to view the content. Notice we haven't done a Forbes article since they changed. from our perspective, this report shows that ad blocking is a much more nuanced phenomenon than many have assumed. Gladly states in their report the majority of ad blocking users are aware that their decision to remove ads has negative consequences for the content they support, so they will opt back into ads to help the content creators they care about. Moreover, the majority of ad blocking users are not downloading ad blockers to remove online advertising completely, but rather to fix user experience problems on a subset of websites with particularly annoying ads. In other words, if publishers would respect their users would respect them. It's a little bit more than that. Malware is a big one.
Yeah.
There's also another thing that they're not talking about in here. And that's that you have content creators, especially on sites like YouTube and stuff like that, who set up things like Patreon. So if you actually wanted to support a blog or a content creator or something like that, there are other ways to support them besides just letting them show ads. And this doesn't mention that at all.
And normally that makes them a lot more money than the pennies they get from ads.
Yeah. That's true. That is true. I mean, and, you know, if you're on a netbook or a Chromebook or some machine that's, or just an older machine that just doesn't have as much horsepower, and you go on some website that, you know, the actual article is kind of taking up a third of the screen and the rest of it is animated banner ads and autoplay videos, and your machine just drags. I've got this little crap top, this little HP Stream 11 I've been playing with that I put Cloud Ready on. And, first thing I had to go on it was AdBlock Plus because you go to a website that had any ads on it, the whole thing would just hang while I was sitting there trying to play some damn video, you know what I mean?
This article's kind of stupid. What was their sample size again? 200 people?
Yeah.
That's not enough to make any sort of assessment about anything. Number two, what was the ad blocker used? Like, GoodBlock?
Yeah, it was an AdBlock Plus.
I've never heard of that one. I use uBlock.
Mm-hmm.
Small sample size, a ad blocking software that no one has fucking heard of, that was probably the entire user base for that blocking software. And then, like you said, the user experience. Getting rid of malware is just a side effect for me. Getting rid of those ads greatly improves my experience of the internet. Ads are a waste of bandwidth, time, effort.
Money,
yeah. And like you said, if I truly care about something, I would gladly support them with other means like Patreon. Ads have no bearing. Even these targeted ads, I fucking hate targeted ads. I don't want to be advertised to. Stop doing it.
Just as a fantastic example, you mentioned other ways. I used to read webcomics like a lot, and I had a couple that I really liked. So I'd buy their books. I'd actually go buy the damn, you know, it's like, sure, you've already read it online, but they publish a comic book. Oh, fuck, go buy it. You know, you're doing it as much to support the author as you are. Now, I haven't done that in a long time, and that's partly because I don't read much in the way of webcomics anymore, and went back and checked out some of the ones I used to read, and it's like, oh, God, they went full SJW. Oh, son of a bitch. So, but yeah, I mean, I have no, like, Galaxy 15, there's no money in Galaxy 15 anyways, but if there was money involved, we would do the Patreon thing, or we would do a content, or not a content store, whatever the modern version of,
buy our t-shirt.
Yeah, t-shirt thing. There's what was it, Cafe Press, whatever the modern version of Cafe Press is.
Redbubble.
Redbubble? Okay. Yeah, we'd do something like that. We wouldn't do But I mean, there's no money in G15 anyways, and because of the way we operate, we there's really can't be. So, but I don't know. I just
I don't see a problem with whitelisting and saying you have to see my ad, see my website, because that is how the website is making money. It's the way they've decided to monetize, and if they're actually creating content, they'll have to live. They have to be able to pay their employees.
Well, there's also the other thing. If you're creating content on the internet and your content is not generating enough revenue for you to do that content generation full time, maybe your content's not good enough to support you doing the work full time. It's not like the
internet
is
good enough if you're wanting to read it. You're just not wanting to pay to read it.
Half the time you have no connection to the shit you find because it's a random Reddit link or something off of Google search or somebody throws a link in TeamSpeak or Discord. You have no connection to the authors. It's just, oh, here's something. So,
yeah, but your way of paying for it, if they've decided to monetize through advertising, is the ad showing up on the website when you click.
True. And if that's not generating you enough money for one reason or another, then you need to find a new business model.
The way it's not generating me enough money is you're not consenting to see them, but you're still wanting to see my shit.
I'm not consenting to see them because you don't go through and organize... Well, the time involved in actually going through and curating all these ads is stupid. You're not going to do that. No one's going to do that. That's the problem. And like Morp said... bad things get through. So because you can't control certain content on your own website, I'm supposed to agree with that? No, I don't like that.
Well, okay, it comes down to this. If you're running a website and you're going to say the agreement is I'm going to show you ads and therefore you're going to get the content for free, you can pull a Forbes and say, oh, you know, put an ad block detector up. And then I will go, oh, well, I'm just not going to read your site probably. And that's mainly because of, you know, sure, I mean, it might not be a correct assumption on my site, but I assume a large chunk of the ads out there are malware. Is that wrong? Probably. I don't care.
Also, one way, if you want to monetize it through ads, instead of getting the generic throw random script ad in here, some people I know that make content get direct contracts with the companies and literally put in a actual version ad directly on the site, so it's actual pop-up ad.
It's actually part of the page. It's like they're selling a section of the page, and it's not like a banner or something. It's actually, they do the paid content thing, of course, like, you know, paying for blog posts, but like, you, again, YouTube channels are a good example of this. There are several YouTube channels out there that take a direct sponsor, and the guy doing the video, if part of the video, stops and reads the ad copy, or, you know, says the required things and comes up with their own ad copy, but they, you know, they actually do an ad read in the middle of the thing, because no ad block in the world is going to catch it if the middle of the YouTube video has an ad read in it, you know?
Yeah. It's part of the video.
So, you could do that in blog posts, you could do that in other ways, and that would not be as obnoxious, and you wouldn't have the malware problem, so, I don't know. But we all jumped you, Madman. You want to finish your thought there?
Oh, I just wanted to throw out, in defense, there is a second side to this, and if they've chose to monetize that way, it kind of... I don't want to say theft, but it is very much similar to theft. It's okay, kind of like if I decided to create Star Wars and the way I monetized it was charging you a ticket fee to go watch the movie in a theater, and don't pay the fee and, I don't know, beat up the doorman or whatever, I'm not going to keep making Star Wars. Or pick whatever content you like on the internet.
Sure. But are you saying you would just, oh, this didn't work and give up before at least trying to find another way to monetize?
There's a limited number of ways of monetizing. Apparently they were trying to do the not charging you. I guess they could go a paywall. How many things do you subscribe to that have a paywall, Morps?
Currently none.
So that
I have
not
in the past,
working.
Though. No, oh, that's not true. I do have an account on a website that is a paywall. Linda.
Cool. I don't. I was just throwing that up.
No, I actually do have one that is a paywall. LYNDA.com.
I have one. Netflix.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point, so I'd have two. Oh, Amazon Prime. There's three.
Right.
See, there's something different to that service than just viewing a website, though.
I'm getting content ad-free. What's different?
Almost ad-free.
Well, to me, whenever you're paying for a subscription service like Netflix or Amazon Prime, wherever you get benefits, in contrast to websites where the benefit is the content of the website, be it pictures or text, I think there's a bit of a difference there, and maybe I'm just wrong in my thinking because I can't think of a good argument, but to me
I
want to
point
different.
Out newspapers are pictures and text, and people paid for those for centuries.
But there was no other alternative. Look at how well newspaper subscriptions are going now, especially digital.
That's because people have found free ways of doing it. One way those free sources are attempting to monetize, again, through advertising.
Well, that, you need to evolve. Newspapers didn't evolve, and now they're dying off. Most content providers, like Murp said, have Patreons that are sustaining them versus ads.
I don't know most, many.
Some do. I don't know that it's most, but the ones who are trying to make a real go at making a living off of it probably do, or they have a PayPal donate button or something. The funny part, though, is, I'm just sitting here thinking in the back of my mind, it's like, oh, well, they've chosen this method to monetize. Are you really going to hold the end users responsible for the content creators' lack of imagination when it comes to how to monetize their stuff?
The end user doesn't have a right to that content creator's stuff.
That's true.
So, yes, if you're not going to do what the monetization method that content creator has chosen, it is up to them to police it. So it is up to them to put a block on their website. But, yeah, you're kind of stealing from them.
So, next article here, because I don't think we're going to solve the internet's advertising problem anytime soon. Unfortunately, I mean, then of course, you got shit like YouTube Red, where you pay YouTube a monthly fee and the ads go away, which I'm still seriously considering, just because I like using my Amazon box, and whenever it stops whatever it's doing to play an ad, it loses everything it's buffered, and it started playing ads in the middle of videos, and it's just like, holy shit, really? Of course, the worst part right now of trying to watch YouTube on the thing is it plays the same ad at the beginning every damn time. I'm not going to watch The Daily Show. Please stop showing me that damned ad. So, but I think I'm going to swap out the Firebox for just a little media PC. One, so I can put ad block on it, but two, because the Firebox is having problems. Where was I? Yahoo! This is from Business Insider. Yahoo is getting ready to confirm a historic hack affecting 200 million users. Reuters reports, or Recode reports, I'm sorry. Back in August, Motherboard's Joseph Cox reported that 200 million apparent Yahoo user credentials were being sold in the dark web. The dark web. Dun, dun, dun. I wish they wouldn't call it that. Like, which one? Which dark web are we talking about?
They're all the same one, Morps.
No, they're not.
The same one,
no,
they
are not.
Nope.
All the same one. It's the dark web. There's one.
There's the deep web, there's the dark web. I mean, what? We need to even agree on our lexicon. Are we talking about shit that's not indexed by Google? Are we talking about the Tor network? Or are we talking about Freenode? Hell, are we just talking about shit on IRC? Come on.
Are we talking about cable lines that just aren't powered?
Private mesh Wi-Fi. I mean, what are we doing here? So, anyways, At the time, the company's response was that it was aware of the claim. Now, Kara Swisher, one of the tech industry's most respected journalists, is reporting for Recode that Yahoo sources tell her the company is preparing to publicly confirm the hack. Or sources did not confirm its exact size, only that it was widespread and serious. Yahoo did not immediately respond to Business Insider's request for comment. Motherboard was told by the hacker who held the data, and he's selling it for 3 bitcoins, or he was selling it for 3 bitcoins, that the breach was carried out in 2012 and was never made public. Data includes usernames, encrypted passwords, date of birth, and some email addresses. A spate of historic data breaches affecting millions of users have recently come to light. And blah, 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 blah. So the attack is from 2012. So here's the thing. How many people are still using the same password for their Yahoo account?
Probably several.
I could tell you a story, but it's work-related, and I'd get my ass in trouble if I told anybody about it. So let's just say I discovered a password that hasn't been changed in 6 years. So, and discovered would be the correct word. But anyways, yeah, if you haven't... Cycross is saying there's other numbers saying it's 500 million accounts. Apparently the story was updated a little while ago on USA Today, but yeah, apparently back in 2012, somebody got into Yahoo and dumped out their database, and it's still floating around. So if you have a Yahoo account and you haven't changed your password in 4 years...
Oh, it's not just that. How many people's
use the same password?
Their Yahoo account, their email address, and use the same password for Yahoo as they do for, I don't know, Netflix, banking, that shit.
Well, and how many websites, if you can get somebody's email, can you go reset their passwords for? Because they all do it by email. Yeah, that's a big deal. An interesting picture they have of Mr. Meyer on the article, though. So, just kind of sitting there dumbstruck. She wasn't CEO at the time this happened, so it's probably... That's kind of a bit of a shock. It's like finding out somebody screwed something up 4 years ago. Yeah, that would suck.
Oh, yeah, now it's up to you to fix it, and you get to handle the damage of the company name. That person's already retired and has a shit ton of money.
All right. Let's all right, we have two things in Digital Dojo tonight, which are awesome. The first is from GitHub. If I can copy the damn link. Here we go. Get this into the chat rooms. It's from the massive dynamic GitHub repository OpenFTP4. This is a list of all FTP servers in IPv4 that are now allow anonymous logins. He scanned all of the IPv4 space and found 800,000 FTP servers that allowed anonymous login on port 21, and that they responded within 5 seconds. Now, obviously, the list is probably changed because it's been about a week since he's posted it. So there's probably sites that have gone down as they, you know, the massive amount of traffic as people start checking out these servers. And he's got a write-up on the blog post, Mass Analyzing a Chunk of the Internet. Did I read the blog post? I thought I looked at it. He had spun up some cloud servers and basically just let them churn. He scanned FTP. We have set a goal. What do we want to analyze? The purpose of this post, let's count how many FTP servers allow anonymous logins there are. So he scanned the whole damn internet and published his results. So if you want to have some fun, even at the bottom of the GitHub page there, it's links to open random FTP servers. I didn't have much luck with this, but it did discover the second link I have for Digital Dojo through this GitHub page because I wasn't aware of it until now. You can have fun trolling through these public anonymous FTP servers, with the links there. FTP tries to find interesting things and sends you a newsletter. Explore a random FTP server. Explore a random FTP server better version. So, and you can just download it and write your own scripts, right? So now you've got a database of FTP servers to look at if you Well, if nothing else, if you just want a place to stash shit, I mean, you use other people's file servers, right? I wouldn't put up anything there you cared about, but you needed a Dropbox. I mean, there you go, right? So, and then finally, that led me to discovering a new subreddit I wasn't aware of. Just let me throw this link in the chat rooms now. We were all having some fun with this earlier tonight. This is reddit.com/r/opendirectories. And this is a subreddit where people post where they've discovered open file shares, FTP servers, NASs, things that are publicly accessible that have software, movies, music. Yeah, it's like the good old days, man. I mean, it's just all kinds of shit shared out there in random web servers. And, you know, just go download it. No file sharing, no mega upload. Most of them, you know, they're Apache index of lists or FTP connections, so there's no ads. They don't got to worry about your ad servers. And, of course, the standard warnings apply. These things are you know, you don't know what you're downloading, so, you know, run a virus scan. Probably wouldn't download any software because you never know what you're going to get that's pre-owned. We were having some fun finding some random-ass documents floating around out there. Found government documents, found several movie and music pages, huge index of e-books, all kinds of e-books. Yeah, just linked up for fun to explore. So, one, if you know of good open directories that you found, you can post them up for other people to use. And two, explore and find software. Find, I wouldn't do software, but movies, music, books, things that shouldn't be public. I don't know. Madman, what do you think about trolling through other people's servers for fun?
I think people need to secure their servers, especially if they belong to, I don't know, the government or a business.
Big, I know you enjoy surfing through other people's shit.
Yeah, I'm doing it right now.
Oh, Static, I'm not even going to ask. I know what you're doing. You were testing your speed connection. BSV, you ever looking through any of this?
A little here and there.
So, yeah. You want to build up a library, this is a good way to do it. We found an awesome movie index earlier. It had a whole bunch of movies from the 20s in it. It's like, you know, if you want some samples and sound effects, that might be a way to do it, because that shit should have rolled out of copyright by now. So, anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. I know we've been promising website content, and we've been sucking at that, but, you know, hey, real life happens. Anybody have anything before we close out the show?
Kind of an update on a story we discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Of the pedophile ring the FBI kind of cracked.
Oh, the playpen, yeah.
The challenge on the warrant they had, the Justice Department has put forth some new regs that are being reviewed by the Supreme Court. One of the changes is going to be that any federal judge will be able to sign a warrant for the internet.
Damn.
So they're trying to get away from this server's located in Texas, but a district court judge in Maryland signed this warrant. They're trying to get away from physical locations on servers when attempting to police the internet.
Oh, that works great right up until you issue a server that's hosted in, I don't know, Dubai. Dubai might actually honor it. They like our money.
Well,
I don't know, some random
place in
Africa.
And that one, you still have the same issue that you have whenever you're issuing a warrant out of country anyway. So it's something that's already come up. But instead of physical location in the States, they're trying to make it where any federal judge, well, I think district, whatever, can assign it instead of just finding the physical location of the server and having a district court judge over that district sign.
Damn.
Or circuit, whatever.
I was about to say that demonstrates a severe lack of understanding of the internet, but I'm not certain that it does. I think it's more just they don't care. That sucks. So, you know, I haven't mentioned 3D printing once tonight, so I should mention that. If you have a E3D hot end, get the little silicon sleeve. My God, that has got to be the best upgrade I've done in a while. It's a little silicon sleeve. It's made out of the same stuff they make oven mitts out of. And, boy, yeah, it helps regulate the temperature of the hot block. And that's kind of nice. But the big thing it does, plastic doesn't stick to it. So if you have a part that curls up, there's not really anywhere for the hot end to grab it. So it's less likely to rip parts that are finished off the bed as they curl up. I had some prints I was doing last night that I thought were done until they weren't. They recovered. And it's I fully blame that silicon sleeve for not letting the plastic grab the hot block and pull the whole print off the bed, you know? There, take your drinks. I mentioned 3D printing. I guess we're done.
I was busy drinking.
Smoke weed every day.